from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter David K. Johnston has closely followed Donald Trump's career for 30 years. In his new book, he's putting the president's policies under a microscope. In It's Even Worse Than You Think, Johnston lays out how he says Trump's policies are creating lasting damage to the U.S. by enabling polluters, rolling back advances in public health, and hurting the economy.
He has loosed political termites into the structure of our government, and they are doing things that will damage the economy, that are going to put your health at risk, and especially your children, or if you're my age, grandchildren's health.
That's all coming up next. Stay with us. Welcome to this morning's forum. I'm Michael Krasny. In his new book, It's Even Worse Than You Think, Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter David K. Johnston examines the dramatic policy changes made so far by the Trump administration, which he calls, quote, a presidency built on open public contempt for constitutional principles. In the book, Johnston examines the administration's reshaping of federal policies ranging from immigration to taxes to education, as well as the president's alleged conflicts of interest and lack of boundaries between his presidency and personal businesses. Johnston won the 2001 Pulitzer Prize for his reporting on the U.S. tax code for the New York Times and is a former president of Investigative Reporters and Editors. And welcome back to Forum, David K. Johnston.
Well, thank you very much. Glad to be here again.
Yeah, let's begin with, there's so much to get into in this book, especially with policies, but I want to begin with something you say fairly early on that, and you've been a bete noire for many years of Donald Trump's. I mean, the relationship, if we can call it that, goes back about 30 years, and you're one of, I suppose, enemy number one on his list. But you said he's not the disease, he's the symptom. After excoriating him as much as you have, and I want to talk about some of that, Why is he the symptom here?
Well, I think that American democracy is in very, very deep trouble. After Watergate, which I got a little piece of that story 40-plus years ago, we adopted campaign finance laws to address the corruption we saw in the Nixon administration. Those laws have backfired. They have dramatically increased the power of a very narrow group of people that in an earlier book I called the political donor class to influence elections and decide who gets to run. We've let lots of people turned off to democracy. Roughly 100 million people who could have voted in 2016 chose not to. And many people feel powerless and estranged from government. Many of the people who voted for Trump felt for the first time somebody was speaking to them, and that's why they went with him. But the deeper underlying problem we should ask is, you know, how can someone as manifestly unqualified as Donald Trump on every level end up in the White House? And it's because we are allowing our Constitution to atrophy. We are not participating as citizens. And the whole idea of this country, which is to ennoble the human spirit to see what can be achieved, is being undercut terribly, because we're not doing the work we're supposed to do as citizens.
When we get into Donald Trump, though, in terms of his leadership or lack of leadership, as you have certainly brought into the spotlight, now we have recent revelations about more questions on cybersecurity in the Russians, and we have the Russians interfering with the last election, possibly from the evidence now that's been put forward by intelligence agencies interfering or really getting to interfere with the next November elections. You have said consistently that you don't put forward anything that you can't prove. But I wonder about, because many people, of course, have been concerned, the Mueller investigation goes on, but been concerned about the fact that Donald Trump has never criticized Putin, really, never criticized Russia, the sanctions that were gone or back. I want to ask you directly about this because you've said that you think that Donald Trump may be an agent of the Kremlin, and you've said that he's not a loyal American.
Right. Well, I think that there's abundant evidence of that. Let me start with the June 2016 email that Rob Goldstone sent to Donald Trump Jr. And if you read that email, which is online, In the fourth paragraph, it says that as part of Russia and its government support, and then goes on to talk about the campaign, it's illegal to accept anything of value from a foreign government in an American election. That email, by the language, as part of Russia and its government support, is not a, hello, we'd like to know if you'd be interested in talking to us. Would you like to go out on a date? Would you like to go into business memo? It is instead a, we're already in business together. Do you want to go to another level and do something new memo? And Donald has been involved with Russians in very squirrely deals that I've described over the years, going back to about 1983. His constant singing the praises of Vladimir Putin, attacking the FBI, the NSA, the CIA, and undermining them, I think all points very clearly to the fact that Donald has divided loyalties. If any American gets an email of the kind that Donald Jr. did, and his father has, we've since seen them tell six different stories after denying this email existed for a year, six different stories that are incompatible, trying to explain this away, one of them dictated by Donald himself. Any American who gets an email like that from a hostile foreign government proposing to interfere in the American election and provide something of value, in this case, dirt on Hillary Clinton, who doesn't pick up the phone, call the FBI, and say, I need to speak to someone in counterintelligence, is not a loyal American.
Well, there are those who say that some of his actions may be geared toward almost dismantling the FBI in terms of how the FBI had functioned. I mean, you mentioned Watergate before. It's been we didn't have a Saturday Night Massacre, but we've had people who were certainly beginning with Comey on down seen by Trump as adversaries, picked off one by one, or resigning quitting or whatever. Yeah,
and Michael, Donald has a long history of successfully compromising law enforcement. He ran out four federal grand juries looking at his land deals in New York City in the late 1970s. He confessed to sales tax cheating and got away without anything happening to him because what he did is he went to the government and said, hey, there's these other people who are sales tax cheats. Let me tell you about those people, and ratted them out. As I point out in this book, it's even worse than you think. In my previous book, The Making of Donald Trump, he spent years very deeply entangled with a major international cocaine trafficker and did things that make no sense whatsoever as a casino owner, because they should have cost him his license as a casino owner, but that make perfect sense if he and the casino owner were in business together. And so Donald's hostility to the FBI doesn't surprise me or those of us who've known Donald for a long time. He knows that he's very vulnerable to a serious law enforcement investigation because he's been committing swindles and various crimes throughout his entire life.
But he hasn't been convicted of any of these crimes.
But most major criminals never get arrested. I once had Harry Kalidouris, identified by the FBI and the LAPD as the mob's number two hitman in the western U.S., in my home when I lived in Los Angeles, bouncing my now grown-up lawyer daughter on his knee. And I was making coffee where he was telling me about people he beat up and whacked who were all involved in mob activities. And one of the things Harry was most proud of is he'd never been arrested.
We're talking to David K. Johnston, and his new book is out. It's called It's Even Worse Than You Think, What the Trump Administration is Doing to America. And on the back of the book, there's actually a plug from Donald Trump. It's actually not a plug. It's something that Donald Trump said, but it's where plugs usually go. He says, I know this reporter is a weird dude who's been following me for 25 years. So obviously, he hasn't done so well. He's been following me in a negative fashion for 25 years, always a hit, and I'm president, so he hasn't done a very good job. By the way, I have to ask you, I want to get into Rob Porter stuff and political termites. There's a lot on the agenda here, but I have to ask you about, because there's still a lot of talk about it, those 2005 tax returns, those two pages of Donald Trump's that you revealed with Rachel Maddow. And Rachel Maddow kept trumpeting, we've got Donald Trump's tax returns. It turned out to be just a couple of pages. But what I was struck by in that was, let me ask you directly, do you think maybe you were taken by that because or gamed? Because it talked about $150 million earned and $38 million paid. You could have been actually given those tax returns to show that Donald Trump actually paid taxes one year.
Well, you know, you make a very good point. I don't think I was played. I think I knew exactly what I was doing. First of all, we reported this first at the new nonprofit, non-advertising news service that I and some friends run called dcreport.org, singular, dcreport.org. And then I went on Rachel's show. And, you know, Rachel does a 17-minute opening monologue, and she does it with everybody. And I understand why a lot of people aren't used to watching her. We're kind of surprised by this. But his 2005 tax return, the first two pages of it, actually were very, very revealing. They were revealing both about Donald and they were revealing about what's wrong with the press corps. Donald made $153 million in round numbers, $3 million a week, basically. And his tax return showed that he had used up all but $103 million of an illegal tax shelter he bought. The time he bought it wasn't illegal. Congress made it illegal right after they learned about it, that he and others had bought it. It allowed him to deduct over $900 million of losses banks had already deducted. If you take a loan from a bank and don't pay it back, that's income to you, and normally you have to pay income taxes. But Donald bought this device that allowed him to take again the deduction that the banks took. So he was a double winner. He didn't pay taxes on the upside, and he deducted the value of it over a period of years. But for something called the alternative minimum tax, which Donald wants repealed, his tax rate that year on $153 million would have been less than 3.5% of his income, $5 million in round numbers. Now, that's an important number because the poorest half of Americans who paid who filed an income tax that return that year, 2005, paid more than 3.5% of their income. And their average income wasn't $3 million a week. It was $300 a week. So Donald thinks he should be more lightly taxed than people who make $300 a week. He paid another $31 million in what's called alternative minimum tax, but that's a refundable tax, and in all likelihood, he got it back in 2006 or 2007 or 2008 because of the way the tax works for real estate deals.
Well, as long as we're talking about taxes, in your new book, you say that 90% of the American people were ripped off by the so-called tax reform bill, and you go into a lot of detail about these political termites, as you call them, that are working in the Trump administration, cutting environmental regulations, doing things with respect to, even bus drivers and truck drivers not being tested anymore for sleep apnea, seeking to cut a whole lot of veteran benefits, something that during the campaign President Trump was very passionate about, you know, veterans getting money. In other words, there's a kind of systemic, again, this gets back to the initial question I asked you about symptoms versus the disease. And when you look at this as you do and put it under the microscope, it's frightening for posterity.
Well, what I'm trying to do in this book, and the reason the publisher put the title on it, it wasn't my title, it's even worse than you think, is that what this book is about is not the news you've heard. It's about what's going on inside our government, which either hasn't been covered at all or it's just been passingly mentioned in the news. And, you know, your income, your health and life and your children's future are being put in jeopardy by the actions of this administration. It's not Donald personally. It's the team he brought in who are, I call them political termites because they are eating away at the structure of our government and the ability of our government to do things like enforce pollution laws, make sure that there is reasonable safety on the job and that employers who don't pay attention to safety are gone after. All of that's being dismantled and undone, and we're focused instead on, you know, Stormy Daniels.
Well, actually, it's come out that Michael Cohen has said that he personally paid that $190,000 to Stormy Daniels. And this is a story. It's kind of unbelievable that a story like that can break. And the news
is so volatile.
A lawyer
with a golden heart.
Well, no, but the news for Valentine's Day. But the news is so volatile all the time and so constantly changing and turbulent and chaotic that something like that becomes almost overshadowed. I just wonder, though, when you talk about these political termites and you mentioned some of the cabinet appointments, Betsy DeVos, and you could mention Rick Perry in this. You talk about the foxes designing the hen house, Ben Carson and so forth. It almost seems as if Steve Bannon was a close advisor of Trump's, and he made those remarkable statements about Lenin and how maybe the whole house should fall down and we should begin again, reconstructing or something. Almost seems like that's what's in the plan here, or in the map here.
Oh, Michael, I think that's exactly what they're doing. These are people who want to get rid of the federal government. And listen, I made a living for 50 years writing about what's wrong with government. But on the other hand, you know, the FBI, not perfect. All I have to do is say COINTELPRO and people should know it's not perfect. But it is a real jewel of law enforcement. Donald is running it down. The ability of the government to enforce air pollution and water pollution laws that Richard Nixon signed is being systematically undone. We have about 4,800 people a year who are killed on the job. They get crushed, electrocuted, fall. Since August, they have not posted any information about the deaths of workers on the job. And if you ask for the statistical information, just give us not the names, but the statistics. No, you can't have that.
Also, I mean, Pruitt has done more damage by many people's lives to the environment than could possibly have been done or even conceived of.
Well, you know, beautiful coal, beautiful clean coal. We need beautiful coal. You know, part of the problem here is Donald is, and I mean this quite literally, is an ignoramus about science. I mean, I quote him in both books about things that he says that make it clear he doesn't know anything about anything, but especially science.
You've actually said he knows nothing about negotiating, which I found kind
of weird. Well, there are actually some law professors who teach negotiation and use Donald as an example of how not to. And having negotiated with Donald many times over the last 30 years, he's a terrible negotiator. He's easy to manipulate and get him to go where you want him to go. You just have to decide whether you're in the particular need of the moment is to flatter him or to enrage him.
Is there anything about Trump that is redeeming? I mean, you know, some people say, well, he's vulgar and he's a bully and all that, but he loves America, and I don't think you uphold that notion. But and I'm not only talking about pro-life people. People say, well, he's non-PC and he speaks his mind and he's tough.
Well, I don't think Donald's tough, and while he speaks his mind, there's no strategy to what he does. That's why President Xi in China has been playing him like a violin. Let me ask you a question, Michael. Have you heard of the RCEP?
No.
The RCEP is one of the most important things going on in the world today. It isn't in the news at all.
Oh, the RCEP. I'm sorry. I misunderstood you.
RCEP.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay.
No, the RCEP.
Yeah, I do know.
You
about
know about that. Yeah. Most people, I think you'd agree, don't know about it. Donald came into office and killed the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which was a Pacific Rim trading zone that we were creating. I was a very prominent critic of that because I thought it gave too much power to monopolists and reduced some human rights. But it just needed to be fixed. Donald killed it and did nothing. So what did President Xi do? Well, he created the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership, 15 Pacific Rim countries plus India. We're not in it. China leads it. And when I was in Australia in the fall lecturing, everybody I talked to said, well, you know, America isn't doing anything. And if we want to have a prosperous future, we're going to have to start pivoting towards Beijing. We don't have a choice here because of Trump. This is really bad for us in the long run that China is exerting greater economic power when Donald has been all over them, attacking him on the campaign trail. Now, of course, he's been very friendly to them. But we're not going to be part of these deals, and we're going to be the losers. Not tomorrow, not next year, but in the long run, we will be the losers. And the partial goal of the Trans-Pacific Partnership that he killed to contain China, to limit its influence, that's being completely undone.
Well, what an irony, too, in light of the fact that during the campaign he was inveighing against China constantly. And also, you know, Steve Bannon has sort of centered a lot of his wrath and enmity against China as well. But I'm wondering about, you know, your sense. We're talking again with David K. Johnston, who's written a new book called It's Even Worse Than You Think, What the Trump Administration is Doing to America. What your thoughts are in light of this Rob Porter scandal and General Kelly and, you know, something in the pipe for about a year in terms of a security clearance? And we still haven't gotten a security clearance for Jared Kushner, I don't think. Go ahead, sorry.
Or some other people. This is really a useful one to understand the way that Donald Trump and the people around him lie and behave badly. The FBI completed its investigation a long time ago and reported to the White House about the accusations of wife beating. Rob Porter, who would see in his position, if you watch The West Wing, he's Mrs. Landingham, essentially. He would see every document the president would see, including the presidential daily brief. He doesn't have a security clearance. Jared Kushner doesn't have a security clearance. They have known about this from the beginning. There were several people when they came into office that they put in who they had to remove because the people who do the security clearance work said absolutely not. And, of course, we now know that our national security director under Donald Trump, General Flynn, was a paid agent. He's confessed and he's now a felon to having been a paid agent for a Turkish interest that's really a Russian front. And we should be deeply concerned on a bunch of levels. We should be concerned about the fact that Trump and his team have shown no sympathy whatsoever for women who are abused, that somebody who doesn't have, and I don't think can ever qualify for the security clearance needed for these top jobs in the White House, has been allowed to work there for more than a year, and that they keep coming up with these changing stories. And when reporters at the White House ask the right questions, well, we're not going to get into that, Ms. Huckabee Sanders says. I'm not going to go any further. They're just stonewalling.
Well, you had Kelly McEnany on. Do you know that name? She's become a spokesperson for the GOP, Kelly McEnany, and she's now high up in the GOP. Now high up in the GOP ranks. I think we may have lost a few listeners just because we had her on as a guest, because she was strongly defending the Trump administration and defending General Kelly, and the others saying there was no due process, which is essentially what we heard from President Trump.
Well, of course, there was no due process when Donald Trump made up this outrageous lie that Barack Obama was not born in Indonesia. I have investigators in Hawaii, and what they're finding is just, it's amazing. It's absolutely astonishing what they're finding. Never did find out what they found because, of course, there was nothing there. This overwhelming concern for people like himself is one of the defining features of Donald. And it's been that way as long as I've known him. He has no regard for other people. You and I and everybody else are objects to be used. We are not human beings. We don't have our own legitimate interests. Our only place in the world is to serve Donald's interests or to be denounced by him because we either don't praise him or we don't bend to his will.
We're talking with David K. Johnston, one of President Trump's strongest critics, and he has a new book out called It's Even Worse Than You Think, What the Trump Administration is Doing to America. We do invite your involvement in this program, whether you're listening to us on radio, internet, or a Sirius satellite. Please feel free to be part of the program with your thoughts, your questions, or comments. You can join us now by calling in toll-free at 866-733-6786. Again, the number to call, 866-733-6786. Or join us by email, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum, or go to our Facebook page. We do welcome your involvement in the program, and David K. Johnston will continue with us, and so will you if you care to join the program, and we do invite you to do that. This is Forum on KQED. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny, and Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative journalist, author, and professor, tax professor David K. Johnston is with us talking about the dismantling of democracy by the Trump administration. And the book he has just put out is called It's Even Worse Than You Think, What the Trump Administration is Doing to America. We're going to go to your calls here forthwith. I want to just give you a sampling of, I'll go right off the top here with some pushback and get your responses, David.
Sure.
Vern writes, I'll read a triad of these. Vern writes, America's elites who comprise the establishment have earned bad karma due to their excessive importing of unneeded workers, exporting manufacturing to poor countries, and attempts to dismantle democracy using the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Those accusing Trump of dismantling democracy are actually the ones replacing democracy with fascism. Skip writes, I think the election of Donald Trump is a statement that our democracy may be finally working. I thought many of Obama's actions threatened democracy. And finally, Joseph, who says Johnston remains in denial that the people voted and Trump won. What specific metrics does he predict will show degradation of our society? I predict that poverty will decrease and household income will increase under Trump.
Well,
that's a kind of grab bag, but you get the
And I thank you, Vernon, Skip, and Joseph. First of all, let me point out that I'm the guy who made inequality an issue in America, according to my critics who blame me for it, the people who don't think extreme inequality is an issue. I wrote a trilogy of books about how Washington and the state capitals have been passing laws that nobody knew about until I dug them out of the record over many years that take money subtly out of your pocket and redistribute it to people at the top and corporations at the top. Like in 20 states, corporations get to keep the state income taxes collected from their workers, and the workers don't even know it. And by the way, Donald Trump's economic platform was my economic platform, the one that I said in 2012, anybody who runs for president on this will get elected, because it's about exactly the issues that have been raised here. The bottom 90% of Americans had smaller average income in 2012 than they did in 1967, the year I graduated from high school down in Santa Cruz. There's no question that the leadership of this country, I believe principally because of the campaign finance laws, has been doing what Donald said on the campaign trail, taking care of the already rich at the expense of everybody else. The problem is, unless you read my book, you're not going to know what Donald is actually doing to our government, and he is not walking his talk. And I show all the way through with named sources and official government documents, et cetera, how Donald is doing the exact opposite in many cases of what he promised he would do. And just one more point, Michael. I was the first national journalist to go after Obama for not walking his talk 9 days after he took office in 2010. And 10 days after George W. Bush went into office, I showed that his tax plan was not what it appeared to be, and he changed his tax plan because of my reporting. So, you know, this isn't an issue of anything except what's the conduct of the person who's there.
And you find the conduct most opprobrious in the Trump administration compared to previous president administrations?
Well, Donald is unlike every previous president we've ever had, and I've been writing about presidents since Nixon. Chester Arthur was an utterly corrupt New York City politician who became president, the 21st president, because the president died. He was vice president. And all of his crooked cronies from New York came down to Washington and thought, boy, are we going to get rich now? And he said, gentlemen, I'm now the president of the United States. This stops. Leave and don't ever darken the White House door. And we got the Pendleton Civil Service Act as a result. And it's why our government is a marvel, seen all around the world as a government that really does many, many good things for health, for safety, for economic development. A lot of more things it could be doing and a lot of bad things it does, but much better than other governments as a practical matter in many areas. Donald now is very clearly trying to eliminate civil service. He wants expanded powers to be able to fire anybody in the government. When judges make decisions he doesn't like, what does he do? He attacks those judges rather than saying, okay, we'll go another approach at this and accept the constitutional rules.
You've said he's the biggest con man since P.T. Barnum?
No, he's the biggest con man in history. P.T. Barnum didn't hurt anybody. He had hoaxes. Come see the Fiji mermaid and the incredible two-headed woman. But Donald conned his way into the White House. I mean, first of all, people think he's worth $10 billion. There is not now and never has been a shred of verifiable evidence that Donald has ever been worth $1 billion. I'm the guy who broke the story in 1990 that he had a negative net worth. He called me a liar for 4 months until he had to produce the documents that showed I was right. When he took office, he asked if he could file his financial disclosure without signing it under penalty of perjury. And he was told, no, you have to sign it under penalty of perjury. Well, it shows $1.4 billion, not more than 10. And remember, Donald testified under oath. Well, how do you determine your net worth? You know, most of us say, well, I own these assets. I owe this to the bank. The difference is my net worth. It depends on my mood, Donald testified. And when he was pressed about this, he continued to say, you know, if I'm feeling good, you know, I'm worth more money today. In a single day, he has given different values to his net worth in the billions of dollars. He just makes it up.
Those tax returns are still being audited, I presume?
Well, we have absolutely no evidence they're being audited. He would not release the audit letter, which is an absolutely anodyne document. And frankly, based on the statements he's made, it could have been a gift tax audit of something.
Well, the IRS said that they would be okay with those tax returns being I mean, it's just ironic in some ways because you remember how people were ganging up on Mitt Romney about not releasing his tax returns, and ultimately he did. But Trump indicated that he would release these returns, and he hasn't.
Donald was twice tried for income tax fraud, civilly. It's in both of my books. On Trump, and he lost both cases. And in one of those cases, his own tax lawyer testified that while his signature was on the tax return, he did not prepare it. That's awfully strong evidence of income tax fraud. It's strong enough evidence they could have indicted him if they wanted to. But he lost them as civil matters. He claimed deductions for which hundreds of thousands of dollars of deductions for a consulting business with no revenue. He had no receipts, no documentation whatsoever, and he complained he was being double taxed over this. But he lost two income tax fraud trials. That should speak volumes about his lack of integrity.
Well, we've got a lot of calls, and I want to go to as many as we can. But just a quick question, as you size things up and with all these decades that you have known Donald Trump and written about him and followed him, is he more cunning than a lot of people think? A lot of people say, you know, he's got the mind of an 11-year-old. He's impulsive. He's stupid. He's dense and so forth. But a lot of what you speak of suggests perhaps Machiavellian cunning in wiliness.
Well, he's not particularly smart. He's not at all educated. He was given his degree in economics, and I quote things he said that show that he doesn't even understand the most basic things about economics. Donald is very masterful at knowing how to get you to think about what he wants you to think about, to go where he wants you to go. He has some very significant skills, but they're not strategic. They're not long-term thinking. And because he doesn't know anything about geopolitics, about science, about history, he will blunder into things that could be very dangerous for us. And one of the things he said is, we have nuclear weapons. Why don't we use them? Clearly, he doesn't even understand the basic principle of nuclear weapons, which is that they are defensive. They are not offensive weapons.
Does he understand the difference between the truth and imagining things that may be the truth and then accepting them and absorbing them as the truth?
Now, Donald creates his own reality. He's not the only person I've covered in public life like this. If he says something, that makes it true. And if you don't believe it, fake news.
All right, let me go to our callers, and we begin. Troy, with you, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. I thought you guys were going to talk about the symptoms that led to Donald Trump. Donald Trump is the consequence of something. And as Andrew Breitbart said, politics is downstream from culture. I mean, Oprah Winfrey gave us Dr. Oz, a man who British scientists found was wrong 50% of the time. He's still on television. You know, she made The Secret a bestseller. And people still today act like she's the most trusted woman in America when you say Donald Trump is a con artist. She's been conning America this entire time, and she's beloved.
She's not president. Let me go to more of our callers here. But actually, apropos of that last caller, I'm reading a listener who says even the Conservative Heritage Institute has stated in a recent article that the GOP is partially to blame for bankrupting America. And Aaron says your guest is not describing anything unique to the Trump administration. Dismantling the government has been Republican policy for the past generation as libertarian ideas have largely taken over the reins.
Well, here's the difference with that. They didn't really do anything. Trump is actually very actively doing things. And many of them are dangerous. I mentioned earlier that they're no longer posting any information about worker deaths. They're not enforcing the laws on environmental laws as they should be doing. And those laws are written with the mandatory word shall. One of the regulations that Donald stopped was to require the testing of every bus, truck, and train conductor, just as we do airline pilots, for sleep apnea, which causes you to involuntarily fall asleep for a few seconds. We've had a number of horrific accidents, bus, truck, and especially on the East Coast, train accidents that killed a lot of people. And Trump killed this because it's excessive regulation. People are literally going to die. Thank goodness they haven't gone in and proposed removing this from the airline industry, so we don't have jetliners that are crashing because of this.
Let me bring in more calls. Anahita joins us next. Anahita, welcome.
Hi, good morning. I have a question for your guests regarding the GOP leaders and why are they intentionally blind to Donald Trump and who he is, and is it any benefit to them for them to stay quiet and kind of go with the flow. I'll take the answer on the radio. Thank you.
Thank you for the call.
Thank you, Jessica. The Republican leadership has decided, apparently, that they think they're better off dealing with Trump and not exercising even their own prerogatives to protect the institutions of the House and the Senate. This has disturbed a lot of Republicans. I'm a registered Republican, by the way, many years standing. Max Boot, a prominent, thoughtful
Excuse me, David. He'll be our guest tomorrow in the 10 o'clock hour.
Well, good. He's a principled, thoughtful conservative. I don't always disagree with him about many things, but I respect that he is principled and thoughtful. Has said essentially that it is the duty of every Republican to vote against Republicans in Congress until we get a Republican Party that goes back to having principles and does not just do what is seen as being convenient at the moment and surrendering to Trumpism.
Well, of course, many of those Republicans who have stood against Trump are not standing for re-election. I'm thinking, of course, of Jeff Flake and others who have simply dropped out, because the real reason that many of them are on board is because his base can make the difference between being elected and not elected. Even Troy Gowdy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, Jeff Flake, Flakes are the first family of Arizona. They're the most prominent family of Arizona. We don't have somebody like that in California, but
well, we've got the Brown family.
Well, but that's not from the beginning. That's a more modern development. And he cannot run in the Republican primary because he'll be destroyed in that primary. And we've seen this with other people who've stood up to Trump, and the money that the people who support Trump, particularly Robert Mercer, the hedge fund guy, and his Mercer Analytics, Cambridge Analytics, are willing to do. This is a real fundamental, serious problem.
Some say that the Republicans made a deal with the devil. They wanted tax reform, and they knew that Trump would be able to bring it home to them. You agree with that?
Well, yes, I think they did. But I got to tell you, the tax being my best known area of expertise, and my next book is a whole new tax system I propose for the U.S. You heard about Apple's paying $38 billion in taxes? No, they're not. They got an 8-year interest-free loan. They pay the taxes over 8 years, most of it backloaded. 82% of the individual benefits go to the top 1%, and the majority of that goes to people who make over $2 million a year, that is one in 1,000 households. Many people have looked at this from different political perspectives, agree this is the worst tax bill Congress has ever passed, and we're going to pay a terrible price down the road for it.
Well, apropos, I'm looking at a comment from a listener named Mike. Let me get your response, David. He says, now that our corporate tax rate has been cut, will this have any effect on corporate efforts to shift revenue to lower tax countries, or any effect on corporate efforts to shift jobs overseas? If neither, will it have any positive effects at all?
It may actually have very serious negative effects. Jim Henry, who is the economics reporter for DC Report and is the former chief economist at McKinsey, the premier business consultancy, and I have been going over this, and it seems quite clear that there are actually incentives here to move jobs offshore and do more business offshore. And by the way, these companies that are paying this deeply discounted tax, 15% or 7% instead of 35, they don't have to bring a dollar back to America. What they get is the right to bring it back anytime they want, but they can go invest it if they want in Vietnam, where labor is unbelievably dirt cheap, or they can buy treasuries during the period of their interest-free loan, and you and I will be taxed to pay interest to them so they can delay paying their taxes. How's that for a deal?
Again, our guest is David K. Johnston. His new book is It's Even Worse Than You Think, What the Trump Administration is Doing to America. Let me get some more callers on here, and let's go to you. Dave, thank you for waiting. You're on.
Much as I loved Barack Obama and think he was one of the best presidents, in my lifetime, I haven't been very happy with a lot of the presidents, and our friend in the White House right now seems to underscore a question that I have for you, Mr. Johnson, which is, do you think presidential power should be severely limited? And I know it's a fantasy at the moment, but maybe a parliamentary democracy or something like that is what the country really needs.
Yes. Well, the founders did not give us a parliament where we could have a snap election because there's a lack of confidence, because they were concerned about the mob. They were concerned that people's passions would be inflamed and that a zealot or an incompetent or a crazy person might become president. That's why they created the Electoral College. It was partly done for smaller states with smaller populations, but it was also done as a backstop in case a madman might be put into the White House. There's been a long debate about this issue. The duties and limits on the president are very clearly stated in the Constitution, and I wish during the campaign one of the television personalities, not really reporters, who got to ask questions in the debate had said, Donald, you've been talking about running for president since 1985. Presumably you read the job description. Would you please tell us exactly where to find it in the Constitution? It's Article 2. And what are the powers, duties, and limits of the president? And I assure you, Donald would have said, oh, it's awesome. You know, the president's power, it's really awesome. It's awesome. And that would have been the depth of his statement.
Well, didn't he maybe think that the presidency was sort of like being a boss of the country with all the power to do whatever he wanted to do?
Absolutely. Donald is a dictator in waiting. There are now surveys of the American Officer Corps that show that he does not have strong support among the Officer Corps. So the concerns I had right after he won the Electoral College, after losing the popular election, that if the right circumstances came along, we would be Rome in 69 before the Common Era and go from a republic to a dictatorship, even if the forms stayed in place. I don't have that worry anymore. He can't do that. But all of his instincts are that way. That's how he talks. He talks as if everyone is supposed to have unity and they're to support him. And he did rallies where he would ask the audience to give personal loyalty to him, just like he asked Jim Comey to pledge personal loyalty to him, not to the Constitution, not to anything, not to the government, to him. That's how Donald thinks.
Another caller joining us. Brian, you're on. Good morning.
Good morning. I just want to ask what your guest thinks about the fact that Trump refuses to impose the sanctions that the Congress imposed, and the fact that we're going into another election. He refuses to, listen to all the security forces that are saying Russia's right on our heels again with this next election. I mean, that's the number one goal of the job of the president, is to protect the country, and he just refuses to do that.
Well, Brian, thank you. The list of people that they just placed sanctions on at the Treasury Department was not the result of careful study of who's closest to Putin and how do you apply pain to him by picking people around him. It was literally cut and pasted out of Forbes magazine. That's the kind of level of incompetence that we are faced with in national security issues here. Donald's divided loyalties to the Russians, who've been putting money in his pocket and have been seeing him as a potential important, valuable agent on their behalf in the U.S. At least since 1987, when they brought him to Russia for a fancy, highly paid trip, should be a grave matter of concern. And we've had several former acting CIA directors, senior military officers in the intelligence area, diplomatic people, even Rex Tillerson, the current Secretary of State whom he appointed, warn us that the Russians intend to interfere with our next election in November. We now know that, in fact, they got into some voting systems. We don't know if they changed any votes, but they got into them. But most importantly, Putin is achieving his overarching goal. Putin has said clearly and repeatedly that democracy is basically a joke, that countries should be run by someone like him, who's a strong man in charge, the kind of thing Donald makes it clear he believes is the way the world should be run. And he is trying to get us to not have faith in our systems of government, to not have faith in our democracy. And he is succeeding in doing that. He's got us looking at the issues he wants us looking at, not at what we need to do to make sure that the United States of America, the greatest political idea in the history of the world, endures and the liberties of the people endure.
Now, the Mueller investigation continues, and one would assume at this point, despite the fact that many Trump supporters are calling it a witch hunt, that it's moving towards some kind of conclusion because they're talking about actually bringing him forward to testify.
Yes, and you know, I understand why Trump's lawyers do not want him to testify, but that's not an option. The president, after all, is not above us. We are above him. He is our employee. And if he doesn't want to sit down for an interview, then he's going to be called before a grand jury. This has been a well-established principle here, and I don't think John Glover Roberts, the Chief Justice of the United States, is going for 1 minute to give up the Supreme Court's prerogatives because Donald doesn't want to testify. As a witness, he's a real problem. I quote a lot of his testimony in both, well, in the previous book for sure, and in various pieces I've written. And if you're a lawyer, he is a nightmare. He goes off on tangents. He is very prone to saying things when he's being flattered. And he, wherever he doesn't know things, he just fills in the blanks with stuff he makes up.
Well, this is someone who said to Lester Holt, you know, I fired James Comey because of the Russian investigation. I mean, right. You know, if you can't at least keep things like that under wraps, then from a standpoint of his counsel, it would be very inadvisable to have him testify. Let me get another caller on here. And Bruce, that's you. Bruce, you're on.
Hi, good morning. It's so refreshing to hear another fellow conservative Republican against Trump.
I wouldn't say I'm a conservative Republican, to be clear. I'm a registered Republican.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I am a conservative Republican, but I'm kind of liberal on social and government issues, so I'm okay. But I am having good luck having conversations, hopefully civil. They always start out a little tense, but they end up pretty good with my fellow Republicans who are part of the base. And I was wondering if there was any advice you had or any input you had to help bridge the gap, sort of the cultural gap we have now, which is that it almost seems that people with liberal ideas cannot even stand to talk to the base. And I've been having good luck with that on social media. And, you know, it does get a little tense and it does get start out arguing, but eventually you can reach the point where they will admit that Trump's not their best guy. But the other thing that I wanted to bring up was, we need to really emphasize the fact that I think one of the arguments that people make is that, you know, so many people voted for Trump and the base and the base and the base is a powerful voting bloc. And really the truth is that Trump only won, any Republican would have won given the gerrymandering and the legal cheating that went on in the Electoral College, which gave the presidency to the candidate who was not the popular winner. So these things are important, and these little details help to chip away at the credibility of his base. And I wanted to know if you had any other input or any ideas how we could bolster this argument so that we can really come together as a country and argue and explain and then break down Trump's, you know, unbelievable success.
God. Well, Bruce, the first thing I would tell you is read It's Even Worse Than You Think. If you don't want to buy my book, go to the library and get it. It's on hold in most libraries now. But you can then tell people this is what's happening. Here's how, for example, Trump is damaging small exporters by trying to get rid of the office that if you're GE, you can staff export operations offshore. But if you're, you know, Bill's metal bending business or Jane's small import company in Emeryville, you know, you can't afford a big staff overseas. So the U.S. government, it's a form of subsidy. The U.S. government does this for small companies. Trump wants to get rid of that. He wants to, he's proposed in the first budget the cutting veterans' benefits if you're a disabled veteran, as my father was of World War II, from $35,000 a year to $13,000. Now, that's not going to happen. Congress won't allow it, but it tells you that he doesn't walk his talk. But also, listen to people. The bottom 90% of Americans have real legitimate grievances. I've spent 25 years championing their cause and trying to show here is how you got your pockets picked by these laws and rules you never heard of, most of which never made the news. You know,
this is not out of self-interest, by the way, but it's recently been announced that the Trump administration wants to do away with funding for PBS and NPR. And
yes.
And just in the news, Mitch Mulvaney wants to take away power from the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. So we've got all that in the mix as well. When I talk about things to the base, there are a lot of NPR and PBS supporters who are not necessarily Trump camp followers. Let me, while we have a few minutes with you, David, go to a couple of comments here because I think they're important. Eric, for example, says, what's the single most effective thing we can do to fight back against Trump and his followers?
Oh, that's very easy. I think the most important election in this country since the Civil War, and I'm including 1932, is this November. If we decide that we want to keep the Republican majority we have in Congress, I believe that we will head in a very different direction in this country. Eventually, somebody without Donald's deficits, but all of his strengths and who is a competent manager will end up in the White House, and we will see the rapid erosion of our liberties and the undoing of the ideals in our Constitution about ennobling the human spirit to achieve.
You remember when midterm, when Barack Obama got beat up really bad during a midterm election?
Yes.
It was almost predictable.
Yeah, I think it's terribly important. I don't want to have one party rule by any party. I want to have a vigorous debate about what we should do. But right now we have a Congress that is not doing its job, and it is not even, as a number of people have pointed out, like Max Boot, taking care of its own prerogatives. That should really trouble people.
Quick question from Nuar. Of the damage and dismantling being done, which institutions and issues do you think will be the most difficult to repair and address with seconds left? David K. Johnston.
Court appointments last for a lifetime, and getting rid of records or compromising them on pollution and worker safety makes it very hard to civilly or criminally prosecute those people who should be civilly or criminally prosecuted.
We'll have to leave it there. Thank you for joining us, David. Appreciate your being with
us. Thank you.
David K. Johnston's new book is It's Even Worse Than You Think, What the Trump Administration is Doing to America. When we return, we'll talk about all kinds of things related to Valentine's. We're going to ask you about relationship deal breakers, and we're also going to talk about the heart and why it's a symbol of love. Stay tuned.